Welcome to the ADAA podcast about clinical roadblocks in PTSD treatment. Today we're talking with Dr. Bruce Lydiard, who is a clinical professor of psychiatry at the Medical University of South Carolina and staff psychiatrist at the Ralph H. Johnson VA Medical Center in Charleston, South Carolina. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Lydiard. Let me ask you the first question about PTSD. How common is PTSD in the general population?
Well, the best estimates from the National Comorbidity Study are that it's about 8% overall, men averaging around 5%, and women about 10%.
How about in the military population? Do you see a difference?
For combat veterans, the numbers have been around 20%, and that's of a primarily male population, so you imagine that the risk is greater for men who only usually have 5%, so it does tend to bump it up, yes.
And are you seeing an increase in the rates?
It looks like the more often someone is deployed and the longer period of time that they are deployed in combat areas, the higher the rates can be, and I've seen estimates of up to 40% in some situations.
That is very high. What kinds of problems co-occur with PTSD in general?
Depression is probably one of the main comorbid problems. In fact, when they did some of the clinical studies to study efficacy of the antidepressants, they couldn't find enough people who didn't have depression, so they had to include a subsample of those people. So depression's huge. It's 50% at least. The other one for males is alcohol, especially young males who've recently been out of the service. Well, substance use of all kinds is elevated in both male and female veterans. And then finally, chronic pain, which follows later, and sleep disturbance, which actually, we'll get to this, actually precedes the onset of PTSD.
Is any one of these more common or more prevalent than another, or does it depend on each individual?
Well, I think you can talk about 30 to 50% in just about all of these areas and not be too far off from accurate. Again, it depends on if you're using people who are seeking treatment versus doing a community sample and whether those were war veterans and so on. But it's a substantial and clinically significant proportion of the population for each of them.
So you mentioned before sleep disturbance. What role does that play in the onset or the persistence of PTSD?
Well, Tom Millman, who's done, I think, some of the best work in the area, and who I fortunately will have with me on a symposium later in this meeting, showed that the sleep disturbance in PTSD is usually the first thing that shows up, and that the severity of that sleep disturbance is proportional to the subsequent PTSD severity that individual experiences. And not only that, but sleep appears to not only drive, but to maintain PTSD. So that if you don't normalize that, the likelihood of people getting substantially better is less.
So can you talk a little bit about treatment? And I think I've read that treatment outcome is sometimes suboptimal. Can you address that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is that PTSD is just a very difficult disorder, whether it's recent onset or it's been chronic. We have some at our disposal, several different kinds of treatments, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors and venlafaxines. We have the cognitive behavior treatment with prolonged exposure, which also, those are two first-line treatments. Oddly, neither of those really get to the sleep problem. So for the last several years, we've been using a medicine called prazosin, which was used as an antihypertensive and an agent for enlarged prostate, but it's an alpha blocker that gets into the brain. And it gets in between a signal that we believe comes from the noradrenergic nucleus that's hooked up to the alarm system, namely the locus coeruleus, and the sleep centers that regulate rapid eye movement sleep. So the picture of PTSD is one of fragmented REM sleep, again attributable to Tom Millman. So the brain will start to generate many more of these periods, but none of them are apparently as long as they need to be to do what they need to do. So prazosin, within weeks, in one study that's been published so far, begins to lengthen the REM period, lengthen the total sleep time, it's really quite remarkable.
That's good news. That's good news. Can you talk a little bit about the overlap of PTSD and chronic pain?
Veterans of war have a higher rate of pain problems, and if you look at the percentage of people in a pain clinic, you'll see probably 50% of them might have PTSD. And within the people with PTSD, probably, again, about a third of them will develop pain problems. So the estimates can range from up to very high. But especially widespread musculoskeletal pain seems to be particularly prevalent. And that's something Dr. Asmussen will be talking about at the meeting. And something that really needs to be studied, because we just don't really know how to treat these guys optimally.
Let's talk a little bit about substance abuse and the overlap with PTSD. And you've said, or someone has referred to self-medication as providing the best fit model.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's several different hypotheses. One is that substance abuse would prime the brain and make it more vulnerable to developing trauma if a victim were traumatized, developing PTSD. The other is that people who are abusing drugs put themselves into risky situations and therefore are more likely, just because of the risky behavior and the environments that that occurs in, that they're more likely to be traumatized. But what the data show is that if this was a very large study in women who had been victimized called Seeking Safety, and they looked at women abusing all different kinds of drugs, and they treated them for substance abuse as well as for PTSD. And what they found was that there is a temporal association, so that the improvement in PTSD predicted the improvement in substance abuse, but not the other way around. And it was a very strong indicator. And the take home for that is, if you got somebody who's got both conditions, they should be treated for both conditions, and you shouldn't tell them to wait to clean up their substance abuse before they get the other treatment. And I think that probably happens still a fair amount.
What other clinical or research implications do you see or that you would like to see for the future?
Gosh, there are a lot, but one of the things is understanding better what the effects of chronic sleep deprivation are. We know it's bad for you. It's pro-inflammatory state, as is PTSD itself, and so all the medical health ramifications of that. If there's a way to prevent that, that would be great, and of course that means better treatment. Some of the veterans that I've seen will have these things that they call flashbacks, and it looks to me, or we might call them psychotic, because they're having audio symptoms or auditory symptoms rather, or visual symptoms while they're awake. I think what's happening is that they're so REM deprived that they're dreaming while they're awake because they have to. That's just a personal little theory. A couple people think it sounds right to them. And it would be nice, because they get antipsychotic drugs instead of drugs that might help normalize their sleep. So the story with sleep normalization, how long you need to maintain somebody, will they retain the gains if you stop the drug? What about combining that with cognitive behavior exposure treatment? And will it interfere with it, or will it enhance it? And finding a way to use non-opioid analgesia. And one promising new thing is low-dose naltrexone that's being studied now, and I hope to also be able to do that for some of the things.
Very good. Thank you so much, Dr. Lydiard. This is Jean Kaplan-Tycrow for ADAA.